Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
All right. So let me introduce Jim. This is Jim Putman. He started Real Life Ministries about 17 years ago, planting it in Pulse Falls, Idaho, and it grew really fast. And just, you know, so then therefore, hey, why don't you write a book about it? Why don't you do this? So Jim's very passionate about disciple making. So he wrote a book, Church is a Team Sport, another book on real life discipleship, and another book on disciple shift. Really making that turn. And then this book here is his latest book coming out, The Power of Together. Thank you, Brandon. He loves autographing books. I mean, that's his favorite thing. In fact, if you can find an unsigned one, it's worth a fortune. Sorry, my friend. No, I'm not sorry. That is true. I am not sorry. That is true. Jim has also planted seven other churches across the area. And as they grow, it's neat to see how lives get changed. So, Jim, thanks for your passion for church planting and discipling. Okay. On my left over here, we got Virgil Grant. Out of East Side, at Richmond, Kentucky, church with East Side. And so, Virgil, thank you for being here. Virgil is has been the senior pastor there for the last 26 years, and it's a very older Southern Baptist church that he has had to walk through making the shift to be a disciple-making church. And so who better to talk about creating disciple-making processes and turning your ship than Virgil Grant? And so, Virgil, thank you for being here, man. And it cost Virgil a lot. He's going to explain and share a little bit of his story, just the cost it cost him to make this shift. And thank you. Thank you for being here. All right, cool. And I'll be nice to you, Virgil, because you're just a genuinely nice guy. I mean, it just, you know. Oh, that hurts, man. That hurts. See, now he's egging me on. He's egging me on. Do not do Jim's work for him. He will do plenty of it. Okay, this is the fifth session. So our first session, if you have one of these books, or these booklets, you're going to notice session one was define it. Well, what's it? So whenever you hear us talking about it, here's what we mean by it. We're talking about making disciples of Jesus. The purpose of the church is to make disciples of Jesus. So in session one, we really defined it. What is a disciple of Jesus? And if you want to be a disciple-making church, that's a critical thing. In your context, what is it? What is a disciple of Jesus? For us, we use Matthew 4:19. Come and follow me. I will make you fishers of men. So we look at it from it's a person who is committed to following Jesus, being changed by Jesus, and on the mission of Jesus. So for us, that's how we've defined it at Real Life Ministries. It's really important that whoever's at your church, if you say you want to make disciples, well, how have you defined it? It's an important part. Also, in defining it, we talk about what's the value of relationship? What is the value of relationship? It's critical that you value relationship how God says we should. If God says, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and he says, love your neighbor like yourself, how important is loving God on a scale from 1 to 10? It's a 10, right? How important is it to love your neighbor like yourself? A 10. So he's calling us to be relationship specialists. If I only have a relationship at a depth of a 3 this way, I'm probably only a 3 this way. You making sense? So if you want to be a disciple-making church, you have to be known for fighting for a relationship at your church. Most people leave churches because the church leaders don't fight for relationship, right? So are you going to get hurt when you're in relationship? Yes. So disciple. Oh, man. He is not innocent. I'm just saying he is not innocent sitting up here.
What have I done? I've been sitting here quiet.
Oh, yeah, you wait. You guys just, yeah. Okay. Part 2, live it. When we talk about live it, it's an important part, right? it's hard to ask other people to do what I'm not doing. So what do we mean by live it? Living it out. When we say doing life together, man, that's a weird thing. What does that mean? There's all kinds of meanings that could be. Doing life together would be spending a lot of time intentionally with one another. So doing life together is, do Jim and I have dinners together? Do we do lunch together? Do we golf together? What do I do with my staff people? What do I do with my key leaders? What do I do with the people I'm intentionally discipling? We look at it like, yeah, you could meet in a home group and be all about disciple making. That's awesome. That's a piece of it. But am I at all discipling anybody in my home group outside of group time? How am I doing life together? Right? Am I willing to do softball together with these people, basketball? Am I willing to hunt, fish? I mean, what is life together with who I'm discipling? It's not just in a classroom and it's not just in a home group. It's doing life. All right. Align it. When we talk about aligning it on session 3, we're talking about clearly understanding and having a playbook. A playbook meaning if we use a certain terminology and we say make disciples, does everybody at our church know what that means? If we say we want to be theologically aligned, where's our stance on that? Is it really clear? Are we walking anybody that comes into our church through an intentional process? We use our 101 to walk people through. Here's our vision. Here's our mission. Here's our purpose. Here's our process. So we want alignment. If you have a small group leader who gets a whole bunch of influence and then finds out later that's what you believe as a church, that's really not wise. You want to start it off out of the gate where you're aligned. And it's a constant battle to keep alignment. Just because you cover it in a class doesn't mean you're aligned, right? And trying to align somebody and emailing them isn't what we're talking about. To get alignment, you meet with people, you walk them through. And it's kind of a daily thing. Okay, lead it. When it comes to lead it, session 4, it's critically important that, and Virgil's going to talk about it, some of the passion, some of the mindset you have to have to really lead this. This isn't something you can just easily just walk through without a strong conviction. All right, now we're on the last one, reproduce it. We're going to dive into a reproducing process. And what does that mean? And what did Jesus do? And Jim is going to break down, looking at Jesus' model, how did Jesus do it? Where did we get our disciple-making process? And so, Jim, you are up. Aww.
You know, I have to say, I hate to say this, but you did such a good job of reviewing that I normally like to redo it just to mess with you. I can't even do it. Let me just say we audio taped all of these so you can get the audio tapes. A lot of this is in the books that we've done, and I want to make all we can do is kind of, you know, skip a rock across the top of the surface. So just understand that it's a journey to discover this, and then it's a constant struggle to do it. That's never over. Let me just say. What we're going to talk about today is what we want to teach every disciple maker in our church. Because remember, we're trying to release an army of disciple makers. So while we'll teach it in our classes, our ultimate goal is that everybody in every home group, every person, understands a process. One of the things that we believe about disciple making, and just let me review just this piece. We believe that the teachings of Jesus are divine. How many of you believe the teachings of Jesus are divine? We also believe the methods of Jesus are divine. So you don't divorce the teachings of Jesus from the methods of Jesus and get the results of Jesus. So we want to study the scriptures, understanding that Jesus did everything intentionally. He was making disciples. He said he was going to teach people how to make disciples. So everything he did is worth looking at. Don't just look at the words he said and his teachings. Look at where he said it, how he said it, who he said it to. Does this make sense to you? So start looking at scripture from the concept of methodology. Because when he said go out and make disciples, he didn't mean go do it any way you want. He meant, I've just done this with you, now go do it. And the church did, and it worked. Okay? What we started to do is go, what does Jesus do? How does Jesus do it? Was there a process that Jesus used that we can discern and that the early church followed? So we call this in our church SCMD. So let me just very briefly go through this with you. SCMD. We believe that Jesus first shared who he was with the world through his miracles and through his words. Those who accepted who he was, he invited into connection, in relationship. Make sense? In that relationship, he began to replace what they thought they knew, what they had been handed, with the truth. He said, you've heard it said, but I say to you. He started to invest in them and to teach them the truth of God's word and what that actually looked like in practice. Right? The heart of the Lord is mercy. He started things that the Jews thought they knew. They had, their traditions had become more important than God's actual word. Does that make sense to you? By the way, this is in discipleship, this chart, and it's also in real life discipleship. Okay, so, and it explains all of this. As he connected with them, as time went on, he began to train them for ministry. At first, it was pass out the loaves and the fishes, right? Gather the crowds, push people back. I believe he chose fishermen because he needed bodyguards, right? But then eventually he started to set them out by twos. He would debrief. Set them out by twos. He would debrief. He started this intentional process of allowing them to do miracles and casting out demons and then talking with them about that. So he started to train them for ministry. SCM. Right? Finally, he sent them out to make disciples. Okay? Matthew 28. The early church. Acts chapter 2, Peter gets up, he preaches that this Jesus whom you crucified is both Lord and Christ, correct? 3,000 people are baptized. Acts 2, they met together in the temple courts and from house to house. They were devoted to the apostles' teaching, the breaking of bread, to fellowship, connection. As time went on, the Greek widows weren't being taken care of. What did he do with the seven? He gave them... They gave them ministry positions. They started to serve, right? Finally, a great persecution broke out. Where did Philip go? To Samaria. What did Philip do in Samaria? Paul, he would share who Jesus was. He would connect. Timothy, he connected with him. He became a spiritual father. He started training him for ministry. Then he sent Timothy to where? He sent Titus to where? You start to understand? It's very simple. And we want to teach everybody that this process is for all of us. If I share Christ with someone and they accept Christ, what's next on the process? Connection. They need to be connected. They need to be in relationship so they can be taught. In that relationship, I'm going to start training them for ministry. They were gifted for a reason. They've been gifted. You know, you've been saved by grace through faith for good works, which God planned for you to do before time began. What is the role of a pastor, teacher, apostle, prophet, evangelist? To equip the saints for works of ministry, service. Do you understand what I'm saying? This reproducible process. I want, if I win somebody to Jesus, they need to know you need to be connected now. You're a disciple. That's what disciples do. How many of the people in your church know that if they share Christ with... First of all, how many of the people in your church actually share Christ? And how many of them just invite somebody to church so you could do it? And then if there's a connection, you're the only one who knows how to connect people. So you have to be connected to as many people as you have. How do you make disciples of hundreds when Jesus didn't do it that way? Do you understand what I'm saying? If they share Christ with someone, how many of your people know, if I share Christ with you, if I help birth you into the faith, I'm going to help parent you in the faith? How many of your people know that part of the process isn't just to sit around in a Bible study and be social, but I'm going to help you figure out what it looks like to be in ministry? And how many of your people actually know that as they raise people up, they're going to send people off to make disciples and do the same thing that they've just done? How many of your people know that? What would happen if we did have people that knew this? This is a part of being a Christian, and they lived it, they repeated it. How many? What would happen if you had 12 people that understood that process in your church? It'd be, listen, if 12 people in the beginning, is God the same? Does he still have the same power? Were those fishermen more educated than the people in your churches? You see what I'm saying? All right, now we're going to talk about a process that every person goes through. And Virgil's going to talk about that. We believe that this is the overall big picture process, but within this process, every person goes through a process of spiritual growth. So, Virgil?
Thanks, Jim. Good job, buddy. Luke said you was going to blow it, but I'm glad that you didn't, so I appreciate that. So, Luke, you owe me $10. I told you you weren't going to blow it. I know, but I got the microphone now, so... But awesome. Didn't he do a great job on that? So, yeah, give him a hand. Absolutely. So, if you're going to have a reproducible process, there's some shifts that you have to make in your mind as a leader and in your heart. Okay? The first one is a conviction issue. You cannot lead the disciple shift in your church, or even in your own life, if you don't have a strong conviction that discipleship is the mission and the mandate of the local church. Because if you're just looking at it as a program, if you're just looking at it as the next wave of issues that is in the church world, then this will quickly fade. Because if you've been here all five sessions, everyone who has spoken has had a deep conviction. And so you got to have conviction that discipleship, investing in other people, being relational, is the heart of the local church. More importantly, the heart of Jesus. The second thing that you have to make a shift, and this was a shift that we had to make at Eastside, is that we had to make the shift from being programmatic to thinking spiritual steps. And because programs is just at the heart of the organization. Spiritual steps is the individual is the center of the organization. So what Jim was talking about here in the big picture is all about spiritual steps. Does it make sense? You have to think spiritual steps. And when you think about spiritual steps, then you think about, well, which program or what can you do to help you to accomplish that spiritual step? And so most churches will not kill a program because the organization is at the center of everything they do rather than the person. Does it make sense? And so for us, we had to get detox on this thing of being programmatic. And so then we had this conviction. We started thinking spiritual steps rather than programs. And then we started investing in our key leaders. I started investing in our staff and our elders and helping them to see that what Jesus did was reproducible. The thing that we fight against the most at our church is that we have the propensity to make things very complex. And when we get something created, then we ask ourselves the question, how do we make it simple now? And the thing about Jesus's reproducible process and the reproducible process we're talking about today is that it's simple, that it's easy. It correlates with life stages that we go through. And so when you're investing in someone, when you're looking at someone, what is the operating system that you have in order to gauge where the person is that you're discipling, that you're investing in, that you're helping to move? So you have to have this operating system. And the discipleship wheel has become for us the operating system by which we help people to move spiritually and to take their next steps. So, when you connect with someone, the first thing that I'm doing is I'm sizing up where are they at on this discipleship wheel. On the inner circle here, there's five stages. Can everybody see those five stages? All right, the first one is what? What's the first stage? Starting right here at the 1 o'clock. What is it? Dead? Spiritually dead. That's pretty easy to recognize in this day and age. In most communities, 83% of people are not Christ followers. The other 17%, what in your community, what percentage of that 17% is spiritually stuck on their journey? You know what I'm saying? 83% of my community is lost. 17% are Christians, and I'm asking the question, what percentage of the 17% is spiritually stuck on their spiritual journey? How much? 16%. Yeah, 16% of them, yeah. It's pretty high, right? So they're spiritually dead, and then when they are born again, receive Christ, what happens? They become spiritual what? Infants. And what are you sharing with them? You're sharing a couple things, your life, the truth, new habits. And then there's all kinds of spiritual steps in there, like baptism, you know, all kinds of different things. And then the next stage is what? A spiritual child. The fourth one is what? Young adult. And the last one is the spiritual parent. Now, so when I'm talking to someone or I'm discipling someone, because, you know, there's a lot of times I have conversations with people that I'm not discipling, but I can have a spiritual moment with them, a discipleship moment, where I can quickly assess where they're at and then help them to understand maybe what their next spiritual step is or what's the bottleneck for them. And so all of this is talked about in Jim's books that he's written, and you can find more out about those. But this became and is the operating system for us as we are trying to cascade this down throughout our entire organization. Now, so there's this thing of having an operating system that you use when you're having spiritual conversations. So one of the things that we had to learn is it's relational, correct? And so I would ask people, what is your name, sir? Ryan. Hey, I'd ask Ryan, hey, Ryan, why don't you join a small group? And the typical answer in most churches, I don't want to. I don't have time. And what do we do when they say that? We just say, hey, well, whenever you get around to it, let me know. Correct? I mean, have you been guilty of that? All right, so now, because we have this operating system, because I value relationships and I care about him, I'm going, Ryan, what is it, dude, about you, about your heart, that would keep you from going and being in a small group and being like Jesus? Is it because nobody's invited you? Is it because of sin? I mean, I want you to be a spiritual parent. I want you to be all in for Jesus. And so rather than just accepting the no, I'm trying to figure out how and what is going on in his heart so I can help him to take his next spiritual step. It's not about getting them in a small group. It's about him taking the next spiritual step. The small group is just the item to help me to have a spiritual conversation. And then if he's in a small group, and I'm going, hey, Ryan, are you serving? And he goes, no, I'm not serving. Well, have you ever been asked? Yeah, but I don't want to do it. Then what do I do? Dude, what's in your heart that keeps you from wanting to go and to serve and be like Jesus? Are you better than Jesus? Because, you know, Jesus served. He came to not to be served, but to serve. And so these are the spiritual conversations, because now we are fighting for relationships. We're fighting for people to move and to become spiritual parents, because this is how we're going to win the world for Jesus, one person at a time, is helping other people to become spiritual parents and not to be spiritually stuck. Now, so there's this core conviction shift from being programmatic to being thinking spiritual steps. And let me just say this, part of our journey when we started this, so we've been on the journey for almost 5 years with Real Life Ministry. And when we started this, we settled that discipleship was going to be the mandate for our church. It was going to be the heart of our church. Because what I had been doing, you could always tell what the emphasis of the church was at Eastside based on the conference that I'd been to. You know what I'm talking about? You know, if I was talking about the foyer, the kitchen, or the living room, you know that had been where? To Andy Stanley, North Point, right? If I was talking about, you know, turning irreligious people into fully devoted followers of Christ, I was talking about, yeah, Willow Creek, right? And so I'm a recovering workshop junkie, okay? And so I don't do those anymore. But seriously, though, so I was just moving, and the church was just every 2 years waiting for the next big thing. And so for 5 years now, we've been settled that discipleship is at the heart of everything that we do. And so we've settled on that. And if you're going to make this transition, let me just say this as kindly as I know how, is that this will actually cost you tremendously. Okay? I would say it could cost you your life. Bob talked about, you know, dying to yourself. For us at Eastside, when we started doing the shift, we had people that didn't like it. And two of the people that didn't like it was my dad and my sister. Okay? And they end up leaving the church over it. Okay? And when they walked away, some other families walked away. And in 1 month, I had successfully helped our church to lose $100,000 a year in tithe. And they walked out. And it was because they did not want you to speak truth into their lives. They did not want you to have a spiritual conversation with them. They wanted to play church. You got any members like that just want to play church? So they left. The most difficult thing that I've ever went through in my life. And didn't talk to my sister. She wouldn't talk to me for over a year. And so when Jesus says, you know, that saying, unless you love me more than your mother and your father and your wife and your sons and daughters, there's truth to that. Now, I'm happy to say that after a couple years, we've been reconciled. They're back at the church. They're still playing church, but I'm still challenging them. And I have a new perspective that they've been Christians all of their lives, but they are spiritually stuck at the infant stage. You know? And they have to do their part, and they're not willing to do their part. And you're talking about painful when you see your own dad and your own sister not willing to take the journey with Jesus. And you're going, man, this is like so many other people. And so when someone is willing to do their part and to be a disciple and to be discipled, there's nothing greater on the face of the earth than when they're willing to do their part. And so what's helped us to have these conversations is knowing where they're at and then helping them to see what their next spiritual step is all about. So I'm done.
Right on time. Virgil, thank you. Awesome. Awesome job. Here's what's cool. Hopefully you're picking up what Virgil, being a disciple of Jesus and walking out relationship is painful, ugly, and messy, right? And can cost you your life. And I want to say, Virgil, thank you for having, as a senior pastor, as a key leader, thank you for having a conviction to build God's church and not run a program. And awesome. He's not going to say this, but his church has tripled in size. And the size, the only reason I mention that is that relational discipleship works. It's slow, it's ugly, and it's messy, but it does work. And I say by work, meaning this. When people understand the responsibility of, I should, if I sit in your church, I should understand how to lead somebody to the Lord. That is a Christian responsibility. And when I'm equipped, wow. Now, when I'm also equipped to actually walk out, if I lead somebody to the Lord, how would I even disciple them? When I understand that responsibility is me, not you, the senior pastor, or you, the ministry leader, when I pick up that responsibility, that's amazing. When I understand how to start journeying with people and helping them spiritually grow, that's hugely, hugely powerful. So a lot of times when churches go out and plant a church, they're planting a building, and there's a big door, and they're hoping people walk through that door, and if they don't, the church just stays there, that size. This is releasing an army on a community. The big difference, huge difference, and it's slow and it's painful and it's ugly because you're teaching people how to be in relationship. And people don't want that. I mean, they absolutely need it, but if they've been hurt, like, oh, that's too scary. Well, you have to walk through and model it for them. But there's a key piece that Jim's going to share when it comes to walking things out in a small group. There's a big philosophical difference. And Jim, would you speak to that?
One of the things that we teach you, and it's in the book, is called the phrase from the stage. When you look at dead, what the Bible says, out of the overflow of your heart, your mouth speaks. So relationship is super important because you have conversations and you hear the heart of the people. Once they share with you where they're at, what Virgil said is, if he says to somebody, hey,
you really need to, you gave your life to Jesus, you need to be connected in a small group. You need to be discipled. And he says, you know, I don't have time for that. I don't, he's revealing something to you about his priorities. Right? When a Christian who's been saved says something that's super immature, like, you know, there's many roads that lead to heaven. Now, when somebody says that, you may go, they're dead, but they also may be brand new in the faith. They may not. I remember I had a lady come up to me and say one day, "Hey, Jim, you know, is reincarnation true?" And I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Have you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior?" She said, "Yes." "Do you believe the Bible is the Word of God?" "Yes." "Okay, now I know you're saved, but you don't know what the Bible actually says." By questions, I'm able to go infant. When somebody's selfish, you know, "I didn't like this music, and I don't like, I didn't get anything out of this sermon," and the number one word out of their mouth is I go, "You're a child. You're a selfish child." Now, I don't necessarily tell them that, but now I know where they're at. Do you see what I'm saying? This is why you have to change your methodology from teaching at someone to facilitating conversations. See, when you're doing all the talking, you may go, "They came to my class or they listened to my sermon, therefore they must be mature." You have no idea what they're doing with what you're saying. You have no idea how they're going to apply what you're saying. None. Until you see them in life and hear from them, you have no idea where they're at. But, see, the normal system is, they've been in my church 10 years, they took the 101 class, so they must be mature. So let's make them an elder. Or let's make them whatever. In a home group, that's why you facilitate with questions to gauge where they're at. Because now that I know where they're at, I know what to do with them. I know what to address with them. Does this make sense to you? How many of you remember Jesus doing a teaching on he would be first, must be last, and the servant of all? How many of you remember when that conversation happened? Well, it happened several times, but the last time it happened. In the upper room, right? They were walking along the road fighting about who the greatest in the kingdom of heaven was. Right? They've been with Jesus for a while now, and they're fighting about who the greatest is. So here's what Jesus did. "You know what? I need to start a 4-part series on humility." No. How did he know where they were at? He was spending time with them. When you sit in your office and you're not with your people, you don't actually know where they're at. And you'll spend 90% of your time answering questions they're not even asking. When you're with your people, you know where they're at. What did Jesus do? He got down on his knees and he washed his disciples' feet. Right? See, we teach about humility and tell the story of Jesus, but we don't live out the actions of Jesus, and then we wonder why our people aren't humble. Does this make sense to you? So, here's why your talking at people is not... Listen, I graduated with a degree in teaching from a secular college. Right? You want to know what they told us is the worst way to teach anybody anything? Lecture. Because only 20% of the people have an auditory learning style. You want to know why most men aren't in churches? They're the worst at auditory learning style. They're action-oriented. They're like, "I don't get anything out of this." Okay? You've geared your sermons towards women. Women are much more auditory. Men typically aren't. I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying generally. Why is it that every good teacher would hate what every pastor thinks he wants? Every teacher knows the bigger the classroom size, the worse the teaching. That's why teachers have a fit when they lose their jobs over kids not passing tests when you forced more kids in the room, which forced them to lecture. Why is it every pastor thinks he wants what every teacher wouldn't want? Now, I believe in preaching, but I also believe in moving it to let's unpack where this is at and properly apply it that happens in relationship. So when you lead, I had somebody come, we had a, did a training not very long ago, and we had pastors from around the United States, so they asked if they could come to my home group. And then after the home group, we debriefed it. I got a bunch of new believers in my home group, and a bunch of people that have been Christian a very short period of time, and even a non-Christian guy in the group. And after it was over, they said, how long have these people been Christians? And I said, this guy's been Christian for 6 months. This guy's been Christian for 9 months. This guy's been Christian for 2 years. He goes, man, they know so much. And he goes, what? And I said, well, what did you notice? He said, you ask questions all the time, asking questions. I got to ask more questions. How does it work that you ask questions and they know more? Okay. So I want you to understand, you don't know where they're at till you've heard from them. And you cannot know, cannot hear from them. I cannot hear from you by sitting up here speaking at you. And I wouldn't think for 1 second that all of you get most of what I just said, because I got up here and spoke. Which is why we do everything based on a conversation. And then we break into small groups to discuss. And the job of your leader is to ask questions and then lead, but listen and respond.